When we first moved to Chicago, I went out, as I usually do of a morning, and did my daily walk. And, of course, I was in a new neighborhood, left our apartment, went out. And so I was really making good time. I was pumping along, and I looked, and I thought, boy, that house looks familiar. And I come around the second time, and I thought, I know I've seen that house before. And lo and behold, I was going around the block. I was going in circles, around and around and around. I had to get on my phone to find my way back to the apartment because I didn't even know where we lived. And so finally, I made it back. But even though I was making good time, I was going in circles. Does that ever sound like your life? And many times we will go in circles unless we have a good, clear, compelling vision of where we're going. Churches are very vulnerable to becoming nothing more than a circle activity that keeps them busy and occupied, but really doesn't take them anywhere. Next week, we will celebrate our fourth anniversary at Briarcliff, starting off with just a handful of people over in the Briarcliff Village in a storefront. And then last year, we started here. So we will celebrate also our first year here on this campus. And I trust that we continue to make an advancement in the cause of Christ. Why is it that God has placed us here? This would be a good time for us to stop and say, what is our purpose? Where are we trying to go with this whole ministry? And if you recall, and I'm hoping you will recall, there's three primary words that we use as our mission or our purpose, the cause of Christ that we're trying to do. And that is that we're going to what? Tell me. We're going to, first of all, is share the gospel. And then what's the next one? Grow in community and serve others. You did so well. Let's do it one more time. First of all, we're here to share the grow and serve others. And we want to continue to make advancement in that. And we don't want to be a church that goes around and around and around. The person I know that had the most compelling vision of all the history of mankind was Jesus. And I want us to think about the vision that Jesus had. It was a compelling vision, but a very challenging vision and a very costly vision that he had. And I want us to look, first of all, in chapter 9, verse 51. Chapter 9, verse 51 in the book of Luke sort of sets as a continental divide. When you get to the life of Jesus in verse 51, everything begins from there on to flow toward Jerusalem. So let's look at verse 1, or 51. When the days drew near, near what? Near the time that he was to go to Jerusalem and there be crucified. When the days drew near for him to be taken up, that would be the ascension. To be taken up, he set his face. He set his face. It's hard for us in English language to understand the intensity of that. But it's kind of like if you see someone very, very determined and kind of their jaws all tense up. They are so very determined in what they're going to do. Sometimes this is translated as determined or resolutely set. But he said he set his face toward Jerusalem. What was all that about? Jerusalem, he knew, is where he would ultimately go and die on the cross. He also knew that he'd be rejected in that process. He knew that he would be buried and then would be resurrected. But he also knew that he would finally ascend back to the Father with the job completed that he'd been called to do here on earth. So that was a vision. And everything in this book from 51 on flows toward that climactic close. It was a tremendous vision, but it was a very costly vision. But it's a vision that will bring redemption to us. I've watched you in these past few weeks since we started this, all this renovation and construction business. And I've watched you resolutely set your face. It's been costly. And I just have to commend you. Timothy mentioned a moment ago, 500 hours. We've logged over 500 volunteer hours during this whole process. In fact, as a note of appreciation, I'd like for all of you that have volunteered during this construction in any way, you've painted, or you've cleaned, or you've repaired, or you've done something in the work here during all this construction phase, could I get you just to stand for a minute and let us express appreciation to all of you that have done some sort of work around here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, you notice some of them are really slow to get up, and I'll tell you why. They're worn out, you know, and the bodies, it's hard to get back up. So anyway, I am so very, very grateful. And many of you have done it. What I'm so very, very grateful for is the spirit in which you have worked like that. It's been amazing to have some of you to come and say, thank you, thank you, thank you for allowing us to do this. And God blesses in that effort. So just a big thanks. Now, also, we've had these information meetings about where we're going and kind of what is being done in all this phase of work and the cost of it. And so we handed out a prayer guide, and you'll receive one on your way out. Those of you that were not able, and I know some of you were not because of schedule and all that, were not able to come to information meeting. But there's a prayer guide. And many of you have already made a commitment, and this is now financially. And I'm going to have you to stand in the moment and tell how much you... No, I'm not going to do that. Here's the challenge I'd like to challenge you with. This is not trying to figure out how much we can do for God. This is trying to figure out what God might want to do through us. Do you see the difference in that? I'm not asking any of you to try to do what you think you can do. What I'm asking you to do is just take 7 days. And this prayer guide will guide you through David and his raising the support for building the temple. And I want you to just take one of those verses a day. Spend time meditating on it, and then say, okay, now God, what do you want to do through me? The first time that Charlene and I ever did this, it's kind of scary, I'll just tell you it is. We were in a building campaign, and our son was getting ready to go to school, and Baylor of all places, and we tried talking about that. But anyway, that was a costly deal. And I had invested enough money for his first 2 years. And so we came into that, and okay, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I remember we said, okay, God, I don't know how this is going to work, but here's what we feel like you want us to do. And we did. And then I thought, okay, he's going to be on his own the last 2 years. We've got enough money for the first 2 years, and he's on his own. And after the first year, we had not touched any of that investment. And after the second year, we had not touched any of the investment. And I think, what in the world is happening here? We went into the third year, and we still had not touched any of that investment for the first 2 years of his college. We went into the fourth year and did not touch that investment. If he had not gone on the 5-year plan, we'd have made it. Then we had to then begin to work in the investment. I cannot explain that. I just know that when we make ourselves available, that's all I'm asking you to do. God, what would you want to do through me? I warn you, it's scary. Because you think, I can't do this. And that's where I want us to be. I want us to be the point, I cannot do this. That's where God enters in. And so when it's all finished, we don't sit around and say, look what we did. No, that's all erased. Because somewhere we've come and said, and there's one verse in here I really want you to latch on to. David, when it was all over, said, look what we've done from the hand of God. God did it. God did. That's all that I'm asking you to do. Many have already done that, and I challenge you to do the same. So you'll receive one of these on the way out, and I would encourage you. But what I'm trying to say this morning is vision doesn't just happen. You know, a lot of people have vision. And I was in school with a lot of people, had tremendous vision. And look where they are now if you chase them down. It never did come out. Because every vision will be challenged beyond your ability if it's a God vision. It'll always be challenged beyond your ability. So it reaches down and touches us. And so we have right now, we're about $80,000 yet to reach our goal for completing back there. So we're making great progress. And I'm confident that we're very committed not to borrow one penny and let God provide as we go along. Now, let's get more personal. God has a vision for your life too, personally. What is that vision? What is it that God wants to do in your life? What kind of vision do you have for you? I was challenged back years ago said, what kind of old man do you want to be? And I began to think, okay, and I could tell you the names of it. Some of the people, and I picked out when he was 65 years old. I thought that's pretty old. And so I'd like to be like that old man when I'm 65. Let me ask you, what kind of old man do you want to be? And some of you say, well, you're too late. Well, there's some older than that, you know. My dad was 92 when he died. One of my prayer partners I had for years was 104 years old when she died. And so I think about, I would sure like to be like her at 104 years old. What kind of vision do you think God has for your life? Or are you just going in circles? Are you just going in circles until some way they put you in the ground? Or is there some place that God wants to continue to work in and through your life? God's vision calls for a commitment, and Jesus made that commitment. Number two, God's vision requires planning. Look in verse 52. And he sent messengers ahead of him who went and entered the village of Samaria. Now, Samaria is pretty significant there because they hated one another. Jews and Samaritans had nothing. There'd been a long-standing hatred between those two groups. And they went through the village of Samaria to make preparations for him. And there it received bitter rejection, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But Jesus was very calculated because he made plans of where he's going. Kind of like Nehemiah. Remember Nehemiah when he sensed God wanted him to go back to the city and rebuild the wall? He went back and he walked around at night and he prayed. And God, he went about the next morning and he said, I want to tell you the plan that God has put in my heart. What kind of plan has God put in your heart lately? What kind of plan? It's usually a plan that stretches you. And Jesus had a plan there, and he was making plans in advancement. So now would be a time for us to talk just as a church here for a moment. What is our plan for advancing the gospel at Briarcliff? Do we have a plan? I think the best plan would be Jesus' plan, wouldn't you? Okay, now the question is, what is Jesus' plan? What is Jesus' plan to advance the gospel? Before we do that, I'd like for you to look at the demographics. And this is the last study that we had done for us in just a few mile radius of the church. And I think we have that map of the demos here. Do we have that map of the... There it is. And I don't know if you can see it or not, but first of all, if you go out a 5-minute drive from our church here, there's about 30,000 people, and we know from studies that only about half, and that is really being lenient, only about half of the people really attend church in our society today, in our culture right here. So out of that 30,000, there's 37,000, there's only about 16,000 that are in church. That means 16,000 are not in church. What if we advance the gospel in just 1% of those lives in a 5-mile radius of the church? That'd be 160 people that we'd see in addition to what we have now. But what if we reached out to 10 minutes from the church? And within a 10-minute drive, that's more like 125,000 people live in a 10-minute drive from our church. Half of that would be about 63,000 people that are not in church within a 10-minute drive of the church. If we just touched 1% of those, that'd be 630 people here. And what if we went out 15 minutes? How many of you drive at least 15 minutes to get here on Sunday? Okay, a number of you. How many of you drive at least 10 minutes? Let's see you. How many of you walked? How many of you, have you ever looked how long it takes? How long, 5 minutes. How many of you get here in 5-minute drive? Okay. And then 10 minutes again, let's see those. And 15 minutes or more. Okay. So it looks like I see more hands that drive more than 15 minutes. But let's just talk about 15 minutes. That is nearly 345,000 people within a 15-minute drive of the church. Just 15 minutes, not beyond that, just 15 minutes. Half of that is 173,000. If we could just touch 1% of those within 15-minute drive, that'd be 1,700 people that could be here. So the question now is, what's the plan? How do we touch? Does that kind of stagger us? There's no way. There's no way, you might say. Yeah, there is a way. Jesus gave the plan, and it's pretty simple. But before he ascended back into heaven, this is a commission that he gave. Look at it. Matthew 28, you know it so well. Matthew 28, verse 19. If you'll bring that up on the screen, please. What's the first word? So let it really translate, as you go, as you go, as you journey. Therefore, here's the first words of action, make disciples. Now, you've heard that a lot, but that is God's plan. That's what he said when he left, go make disciples. What does that mean? How do we do that? How do we go about doing that? I want you to look at this graphic. We've been talking a little bit about in staff meeting of how this works. And in a simple term, you know, it's pursuing Christ together. But in a practical term of how do we go about doing that? And I want to continue to read the verse. And there's kind of three components of when we say, go make disciples. Well, he said, go and baptize them. That means bring them to the point. It's to teach them. The word disciple means to learn or to be a student. And so somewhere along the line, you, as you go, whatever you do through the work, it may be in your neighborhood, maybe at work, maybe a friendship, maybe in the family, wherever you go, watch for those opportunities to, first of all, it starts with just helping people know, to know Jesus and follow in baptism. So the first word is to know. Help them to know. It's amazing how many people don't know that much about Jesus, do not know why he came, do not know. And so we just start there, helping them know. The second one, the discipleship is not over, because the next step is help them grow, not only to know about Jesus, but to grow in that relationship with Jesus. And then the last part of this verse says, teaching them to observe all things that I've commanded, that is to obey. So discipleship really is a three-prong, and it starts with people that are not Christians at all. Discipleship, you disciple people that are not Christians yet. You help them know what it is to follow Christ. Then you help them grow, and then you help them obey that along the way. That is discipleship. That's Jesus' plan. There's no better plan. And you do that as you go, wherever you go, whether there's a neighbor or in your work, like I said, or a family, wherever, you watch for that along the way. That is the plan of Jesus. And it has worked since Jesus was here, And that's the way it works across the world today, is it is that helping people know him. And you know people right now in your life that really do not understand the work of Jesus and the purpose of their life that Jesus has for them. And there are some that do not know how to grow. And there are some that are really struggling with obeying. And they can be supported and helped and encouraged along the way. Now, the third thing that we can learn from Jesus' vision is it demands a patience. Look at it in verse 53 and 55 through 55. But the people did not receive him. In fact, they bitterly rejected him. Why? Because he had his face set to go to Jerusalem. And when his disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, do you want us to call down or tell fire to come down from heaven and consume them? And Jesus rebuked them. There was a bitter hatred. In fact, I read this week where there was actually some Samaritans so bitterly hated the Jews, they came and slipped into the temple and stewed human bones within in the temple. They'd do anything to deface, and there was such a bitter hatred toward them. And they rejected. If you ever had people that reject you, is there tension in our world today called rejection? Do you sense the tension building and that the rejection of our world it becomes so very violent? And there's not a lot of understanding between the two. And so if you don't accept the way that I believe, I'll kill you. It's amazing how high that is. And it was somewhat, that's nothing new. That's nothing new. It's always, and the James and John, even followers of Christ, felt the same way. They said, let's just call down fire from heaven. Have you ever had friends or family members or neighbors or co-workers to reject, maybe belittle, maybe put down your faith? How do you feel about that? I started sensing that when I was in high school. They'd kind of make fun of me. How do you feel at that time? You just want to slap them. In the holy name of Jesus. All honesty, you feel something. You know, we understand James and John, don't we? That there's a rejection and sometimes a put down on that. So what do you do with that? You remember Eugene Peterson, he's run that, did the paraphrase, the message. Some of you read that. It's a paraphrase of the Bible. When he was a kid, his mom, very, very devoted Christian, had taught him. He memorized a lot of scriptures, and she had discipled him so very well. And there was a bully in school named Garrison. And everybody knew that Garrison was a bully, and he would bully students. And so Eugene would run home crying because he'd been bullied. And one day, you know, his mom had said, you know, you forgive him, you don't, and all this kind of stuff. And all these scriptures he'd memorized. You use some of those scriptures when you're bullied. And then I won't just read to you what he says happened here. He said, something snapped within me, totally uncalculated, totally out of character. For just a moment, the Bible verses disappeared from my conscience, and I grabbed Garrison. To my surprise and his, I realized I was stronger than he. I wrestled him to the ground, sat on his chest, pinned his arms under my knees. I couldn't believe it. He was helpless under me, at my mercy. It was too good to be true. I hit him in the face with my fist. I felt so good, and I hit him again. Blood spurted out of his nose, and a lovely crimson fell on the snow. By this time, all the children were cheering me on and egging me on. Blackie's eyes burst his teeth, and a torrent of vengeance poured from them. I said, Garrison, say my uncle. He wouldn't say it. I hit him again. More blood, more cheers. The audience now was bringing out the best in me. And then I said, my Christian training kicked back in for just a moment. I said, say I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And he said it. And Garrison was my first Christian convert. And what did Jesus say? No. Jesus rebuked the disciples. Said, you don't call down fire from heaven. That's not the way. My dad told me years ago, son, you'll never win an argument. You'll never win an argument. There has to be understanding and listening and caring. So how do we practice this patience? When we find someone that's not a believer, you just, and I've told you this before, it's a principle, I think. You just gently tap on the door with some sort of question and listening. And if they open the door a bit, you take the opportunity of just that small opening. You don't, when they open the door, put your foot in and push. You just listen to them. And then see if the door opens a bit more. And you only move in as they open the door. I had a neighbor one time that I spent such a long time with him. It wasn't a very open door at all. And then there's some things happened in his life that opened a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more. And finally came to the point of some serious conversations that led him to know Christ. That's patience. It just takes a good while. And you cannot force. Jesus did not force. We cannot force. We just have to watch with patience those opportunities to advance the gospel. And God will provide, if we watch for them, small opening doors. And we take advantage of them the best that we can and care for them. And lo and behold, it opens up. I remember one family that had been so bitter and rejecting anything that I'd say. But then the night that their son was in an accident and was killed, the door opened really wide. You just never know with that rebel that you live close by when that door will open a little bit more. But I assure you, if you try to force yourself in, it will lock on you. And Jesus rebuked them. He said, that's not the way to do it. It takes a lot of understanding, patience, and care, and listening. One last thing in verse 56. Then some of them went to another village. You know, in John 6, Jesus was feeding the 5,000. As long as he was doing miracles, he had tremendous crowds. But if you go on down a little bit later in John 6, verse 66, you ought to be able to remember this verse, 666. John 6, verse 66. Jesus had really challenged them. And then he turned around and looked, and most all of them had left. The 5,000 were gone now. Just the 12. And he said these stinging words and challenging words, do you too want to leave? And that's kind of the words that he says to us. Do you too want to leave? And in essence, they said, we've decided to follow Jesus. We sang a song a moment ago. I've decided to follow Jesus. It's written back in the 1800s. It's been rewritten and different kinds of ways to sing it, and so it's still sung by groups all over the world. I've decided to follow Jesus. Do you know how that song came about? I don't think I'll ever sing that song quite the same way as I have read through how that song came about. It was written by a man in India. And there was a spiritual awakening happening in England and Germany, and they started sending missionaries to India. And not a whole lot of openness at all to the gospel. It was pretty closed. But a Welsh evangelists begin to speak, and there was one family that stepped forward and trust Christ and became Christians. When the village found out about that, they began to reprimand and make fun of them and all kinds of things. And then the chief of that village found out, and so he called that family to the town square, and everybody gathered around. And he said, "You deny that faith, or we're going to kill you and your family." Time out. What would you have done? And this man had jotted down some words when he became a Christian. He was at loss for words, except these words that he had jotted down when he made a commitment. And what he jotted down is, "I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back." And the chief said, "If you don't reject that faith, we're going to kill your kids right in front of you. I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back." And they slaughtered his kids in front of him. And they said, "We're going to give you another chance, or now we'll kill your wife." And he said, "Though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back. No turning back." And they killed his wife right in front of him. And then they looked at this man, they said, "We'll give you one more chance before we kill you." And then he said these words, "The cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back." And he wasn't even able to finish. And they killed him. And I think, my soul, I've sung that so flippantly. I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. I'm telling you, the vision of Jesus is tough. It's more than going to church. God has a vision for our lives. And many times, when we hear about vision, we talk about all these glamorous saints. How wonderful, how wonderful. Sometimes, it's very challenging. For Jesus, it cost him his life to give us life. The story's not over. That chief could not get over this. Why would a guy like that literally give his life and his family's life? What is it about this Jesus? And he began to research. And it wasn't long until he became a follower of Jesus. And most of the village became followers of Jesus, because someone said, "No turning back. No turning back." Aren't you glad that Jesus, when he saw the vision of the cross, didn't turn back? And now we can have life because of his vision. Would you bow with me? Lord, I don't know how many times I've sung, "I've decided to follow Jesus." And many times I've just done it kind of out of habit or flippantly. But I'd like, Lord, if some way you could just help us to see the vision that you have and the cost, and not be afraid of that, and to do whatever it takes. I'm praying that we at Briarcliff will not let one thing stop us from fulfilling your vision. If it takes us out of our comfort zone, if it takes us overtime, if it wears us out, if it costs us dearly, that we would say no turning back. no turning back. I'd like for you to, as we just sing this, and Luke, we might just do this a cappella. And let it be your prayer. I've decided to follow Jesus. And heads bowed, eyes closed. Why don't we make this our prayer? And the vision for this church will take nothing less than that. And many of you already have made, you know, tremendous sacrifices. But that's not over. And when we do that, it's amazing how many others in the village will come to know Christ in the way we've discovered Him.